Welcome to the Link to Prevention podcast, hosted by the CASARC Prevention Team.
On today's episode, Jessica and I are answering some student questions. When we're in classrooms, students are often given the opportunity to anonymously ask us questions. We decided to answer a few of those questions today to give our listeners some more insight into the types of questions students are asking this school year. These questions came from high school students. So let's dive in. The first question we're going to start with, and I'm going to pass this one to Jessica, is it still considered sexual assault if the person is 17 and you are 14 and they kissed and touched me without consent? I'll give a little caveat that this was probably the day we were talking about age of consent laws.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that one of the things that we talk about with high school students is age of consent in Washington State, and some kind of like of the misconceptions around age of consent law, because it's really confusing. A lot of people are told about it, or that it's a thing that exists, but there's not a lot of context provided around what the law is actually for. So we start with the fact that age of consent is not about legality for sex. It is not about reaching a special age threshold before sex is legal. People under the age of 16 can have consensual sex. There can also be sexual assault under the age of 16. There's also people that can be sexually assaulted over the age of 16, and not all sex after 16 is consensual. So in Washington State, the age of consent is 16. That is different depending on what state you're in, because it's not a federal law. This law is about power, and it is about age difference, and that's it. So it's just looking at recognizing that if somebody is older, they have more power than the younger person, and therefore it is easier for the older person to manipulate a younger person, to convince a younger person to do something that they wouldn't otherwise do, physically force somebody to do something that they wouldn't otherwise do, and also just has more power than a younger person. And so this law exists to combat an older person taking advantage of a younger person in a sexual relationship. And that's all that this law is for. So when this person is asking if the older person is 17 and you are 14, legally that is, that wouldn't be allowed. That is illegal for a 17-year-old, at least in Washington State. However, the important part in this question is that they kissed and touched me without consent, which we would say at any age is sexual assault. So when we talk about sex and consent, we say that you cannot have sex without consent. If it is sex without consent, that is considered sexual assault, regardless of what age either of these people were. If there's not consent, then that would be illegal. What we make clear to them is that you still need to have consent, regardless of what age you are. And also, just because a relationship is legal, just because there is not a law against that relationship happening, that doesn't mean that it's an equal relationship, or that there aren't still power dynamics at play, or that it's a healthy relationship. So that is also something that we remind students about. But yeah, that question is, if there's not consent, then it's still considered sexual assault. All right, Hannah, next question. How is consent a two-way street?
So I'm really glad we got this question, because I typically talk about consent before Jessica dives into the law, and it's always good to know what language I'm using is maybe not making sense to everybody. So I'm so glad for this question, because the number of times that I've said consent is a two-way street is hard to measure. I say it all of the time, right? So one of the ways that I talk about consent is it being a mutual agreement between two people, right? And that it is not something that happens to somebody. Consent is not something that is done by one person to somebody else. It is mutually happening between and amongst two people or people. And that's what I mean by it being a two-way street, is also that it's about communication. It's about the mutual agreement. It's about two people being on the same page. So by two-way street, you can think about it as one person giving, one person taking, one person taking, one person giving. It's between those two people.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times, especially when we ask students what their understanding of consent is, generally when we go in, most of them can tell us that it's about giving permission, but they don't always also include the receiving permission part of it. And so I think you do a really good job of making it clear that Yes, consent is about you expressing what you would want to do, but it is also about receiving a yes from the other person as well.
Yeah, I think that is right, right? The communication is key. You're not forcing people to do things that they don't want to do. When somebody says no, we're listening to it and we're respecting when other people are not on the same page as us. Next couple questions. It's a two-parter. If a person lets you keep their nudes, is that okay? And second part, how do we know if a person actually deletes our nudes?
These are totally fair questions. And I would say that it is really, especially the first part of the question, as far as like, is it okay if another person keeps them? That is completely up to you as the individual that is the one depicted in the pictures. I would say that probably be a lot of conversation around what that means and like what still is and is not okay with you, and setting boundaries around that person keeping those pictures. And especially if you're not in a relationship with them, I would wonder why they would feel the need to still have those pictures. But I think that that is about identifying the trust that you have in that other person, and then also knowing that if that person breaks your trust, that's not your fault, and that there are still resources that you have available to you if that does happen. But I think that that first part of the question, at least, is pretty a personal decision as to what you're comfortable with. And I would just encourage people to have those conversations about boundaries, about what it is you are comfortable with, before it becomes an issue, or before that relationship ends, or before the pictures are sent. I think that those are conversations that should be had.
Yeah, well, because we're not here also to say what's okay and not okay.
Yeah.
Because it, as Jessica was just saying, it totally depends on you and your comfort level and your trust with this person. And if you are once in a relationship and are no longer in a relationship with that person, that trust might be a little bit different.
Yeah.
So that's also something to think about and to know, even if you broke up, even if your relationship with this person is different, it's always okay to ask them to delete those photos. If you don't want them to have those anymore, that is up to you. That is your choice.
The second part of that, how do we know if it actually deletes your pictures? You don't, unfortunately. If they have told you that they did, but they don't want to show you their phone or ensure that nobody can have access to them, I mean, there's not a sure way of knowing that they don't have copies of them somewhere else. There's just no way to know, which is kind of what makes this really hard and really difficult to navigate, which is also why I encourage people to have these conversations and to discuss boundaries ahead of sending anything. Because at the end of the day, what we know, especially about online spaces, is that the minute that we make something accessible to other people, then that limits our control over that thing. Whenever we send anything to somebody else, we don't really know what they're going to do with that. And so we have to ask ourselves if we're okay with that. If that happens, you're not, or if there are boundaries or stipulations around that thing, then those are conversations that we should have. But yeah, there's not a way to ensure that something is actually removed or deleted from anybody's possession.
And of course, on the flip side, we also always encourage people to listen when somebody communicates to them, I don't want you to have that picture anymore. I am not comfortable with sending you something. Right. That's the whole other piece of boundaries, Jessica, that you and I always talk about, is respecting when someone says no, not pushing someone, not forcing someone into anything. That's the consent bit too. So there's also that bit of listening and respecting people in your life when they ask you to get rid of something or don't want to send you something.
All right. Last question. How can I support a person who has been sexually assaulted? What can I say or do?
Such a good question. I think Jessica and I, as we were going through the questions, decided to keep this one, even though we've maybe answered it in the past. We have had a couple of other student question episodes, and there have been questions similar to this one. However, we think it's always a good one to answer and to talk about, because we get asked about it and at least every classroom that we're in. We had a couple of different questions that were really similar to this from different schools asking, what do I do if my friend comes and tells me that they were assaulted, or comes and tells me that someone shared their naked pictures online? So we are constantly talking about this with students. We want to empower students to know some things they can say, some things they can think about if somebody comes to them and discloses, because we also know and have said probably many times that students and peers and youth are most likely to disclose to each other before they disclose to a parent or a teacher or an adult in their life. So knowing that, right, we want to be equipping them with some tools, some ideas, some thoughts, some in knowing what to say and how to support somebody, because it's not easy, right? Like, I think about myself as a professional in the field of sexual violence prevention, and if somebody I love or care about comes to me and tells me that they were sexually assaulted, it is still hard, right? Like, that doesn't go away. So just to validate that, firstly, that it's hard because you care about this person, and taking a deep breath always helps. And also trying to remember as much as you can, as often as you can, to keep this about that person and not about yourself. Even if you're feeling upset and sad and angry and want to go rip somebody's head off to protect or take care of this person, that's all valid. And that's probably not what that person needs in that moment. The best thing to do is to sit and listen and be with them and try to figure out what they need, if anything, because sometimes just sitting together is also okay. Sometimes words aren't going to do anything, right? Just sitting silently oftentimes also really helps.
And just, this isn't a question, but just a question for you, Hannah. What should someone do if they've been supporting a friend for a really long time and they don't really know what else to do beyond the support that they've already provided?
Oh, such a good question. We get that one from students a lot too, of like, I try to be everything for my friend, my partner. They tell me all these horrible things that have happened or these feelings that they're having, and I'm the only one who knows. And that is too much to carry, no matter how old you are. That is so heavy. That is so much. That is why, as adults, oftentimes we talk about your partner can't be the only person in your life either, right? Like, you still need friends and colleagues and other people to talk to. We can't be each other's worlds. And yeah, we do get that question a lot from students when you're just sort of maxed out. And I think that that's okay to take a step back and recognize, this is a lot, and I want to support you, and I have been supporting you, and I want to continue doing that. But going forward, I need to do that differently because I don't have the capacity to keep doing it in this way. And that's so hard, right? That's so hard to step back and worry about this person, what might happen if I'm not there for them every second of every day. Helping them, supporting them to find somebody else who they can also talk to, encouraging them to talk with somebody else. If they're not willing to do that, then that's up to you to really kind of decide what you need and the type of support that you need in order to be able to still be in this person's life, because that's ultimately probably what you want. But we, as I said, can't be everything to anyone.
No, I mean, that makes sense. Like, I think you always say in class, like, we shouldn't be our friends' therapists.
Yes.
And there's a reason that we, like, can't be our friends' therapists, and that it doesn't benefit either person in that relationship to have that component involved in the relationship. Most people are not professionals in this work. And even if they are, we still wouldn't be supporting a friend, because that dynamic is completely different. And you can actually do more help for that person by getting somebody else involved, and encouraging them to talk to somebody else about everything as well. So yeah, I think that we usually do a very good job of letting people know that it's okay, that you can't be everything for everybody, and that it actually doesn't help them in the end. And then I would also just add that if people are interested more in a more in-depth explanation about supporting people, especially specifically around sexual assault or sexual violence, we do have a podcast on that. We also did a whole webinar last April that is on our YouTube channel, on KSARC's YouTube channel. There are a few example videos of receiving a disclosure and what you should say and how you should respond in different situations. So I would encourage people to check out our website, check out our YouTube, and see some of those other resources that we have about supporting people. Because you're right, it is the like number one question that we get is, you know, this hasn't happened to me, but I know people that it has happened to, and I want to make sure that I'm there for them, and giving people the tools to be able to do that.
And I was thinking of students, but also just from community members, adults. Yeah. We talk about this all of the time, you know, starting as 8th grade, I think we started talking about it this year, all the way through adults that we see all of the time.
Thank you all for joining us for this Q&A podcast. It was nice to talk with you, Hannah, and just have a conversation with you answering some of these questions that we get.
Yeah, you too. It's like we're in a classroom, but there's no students.
Yeah. Until next time, stay curious, be kind, and take care. Find out more about the services offered and to stay up to date on everything that Prevention is doing, Check us out online at casearc.org. That's K-C-S-A-R-C.org. This podcast was funded in part by a grant awarded by the Department of Justice. Points of view in this podcast are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the Department of Justice. Grants funded are administered by the Office of Firearm Safety and Violence Prevention under the Public Safety Unit at the Washington State Department of Commerce.